Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome, everybody, to the Fantasy Baseball Beat. I am Mike Carter today, filling in for Chris Torres, who is dealing with some family stuff right now. Chris, we thinking about you and your family. Everything is well. I don't want anybody to be worried about it, but Chris has taken a little time off this week to deal with some family stuff. And so we have, as always, my good friend and your good friend, Davey Downer, Dave Funnel. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. And I like in the intro that you're Mike Carter today. I don't know what you are on other days, but...
Yes, I can be whatever anybody needs on okay. those days. Right. Sometimes I'm Mike Carter. Sometimes I'm Miguel Cartier. It depends on who you talk to and what you might need in that moment. But
Magnificent.
Yes. And as we've talked about before, Dave, you are not a Quebecois. So we'll leave it there. Exactly. You are not a separatist, as they say in Canada, right?
No.
Which I find fascinating. That would be a whole podcast discussion having nothing to do with baseball, should we ever decide to go into that. But a really interesting situation to watch from your southern neighbors here. So, yes, Mike Carter today and always, unfortunately, for me and for most people around us. And we're here with the Fantasy Baseball Beat. It's our post-trade deadline edition. We're less than 24 hours removed from the Major League Baseball trade deadline yesterday. We remain part of the Pitcherless family of podcasts. We are super proud of that moniker. Glad to be with you. And Dave and I are going to talk through some of the different things that happened yesterday. There were some moves that were expected to be made that were not. There were other moves that maybe were a little bit surprising based on who was doing the selling and who was doing the buying as we look at it. Dave, yesterday over the last 72 hours, we've seen 60 different transactions since Monday. I was driving home from Michigan yesterday, and you guys are blowing up my phone because I didn't have any reception with the moves that were being made. What were your overall thoughts on the activity that we saw over the last couple of days?
It was crazy. It was one thing after another, especially near the end. It was just a flurry of deals, like you said. And I found it quite interesting, and I know we'll talk more about it later, but these teams just loading up on bullpen arms, and it was one relief pitcher after another loading up. It was like the Bill Belichick of fantasy here, because they don't care. These teams don't care about your fantasy teams. They don't care that you drafted someone in the fifth round and now he may get two saves the rest of the year. They don't care. It was the Bill Belichick of trade deadlines, and these teams just loaded up on bullpens, and now we're here left with it all just trying to figure out what the heck are we going to do with this.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack from all of these moves that were made over the last few days, as you point out. There were several teams, I think, that really improved, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what teams you thought did the best and making moves that you liked, and some other teams, including my beloved Chicago White Sox, that did not make as many moves as you would have liked them to make. We'll talk about that in a minute. But there was also some surprise yesterday, too, I think, in that there were some players that ended up staying put that people didn't anticipate were going to stay put. Pitchers like Zach Gallen. Dylan Cease was rumored to be on the move, but he ended up staying in San Diego. Rizal Iglesias was a bit of a surprise in Atlanta. I thought, you know, he'd be on the move to someone who was looking for bullpen help. But it turned out that really there were better bullpen arms than Rizal Iglesias available for teams for the taking yesterday. Luis Robert was somebody who ended up staying put in Chicago. A lot of speculation had been that he was going to move on. And I know that you were looking at Joe Ryan as somebody that was potentially going to get moved as a late move there before the deadline, but he ended up staying put in Minnesota. One of like 11 guys who ended up staying in Minnesota with the purge that they had yesterday. But Dave, let's get to some big names to review who got moved, and maybe were a little bit surprising, but I wanted to get your take on the Carlos Correa trade back to Houston. You mentioned something to me yesterday that was quite interesting about Minnesota's payroll situation and about their financial situation and what that ended up meaning for them. But talk a little bit about that move and what you think Correa is going to do in Houston.
Yeah, I loved what Houston did here. specifically with Carlos Correa, because they had to do something with Isaac Paredes likely out for the season. I mean, he may have season-ending surgery, and I think the hope is that he'll be ready in the spring. So they needed to do something, and it turns out that Minnesota wasn't just a huge salary dump here, but it was in general. And I read something somewhere, and I wish I had the credit for it, but it was that they're in debt by a lot, like by, was it 40 million or 400 million or something? And I know it had to do with the TV deal by Bally's, I believe, from a couple years ago, but I had no idea that they were this much in debt and that they were really trying to dump salary. And it's quite, you know, you can see it based off their moves yesterday. But here with Carlos Correa, I mean, it's great in Houston short term. He's going to help them. He said he's always wanted to play third base. There was something from Brian McTaggart on MLB.com saying he's happy to play third base. He just never got the chance to do it in Minnesota. So he's happy. He's going to be playing there. It's a nice, they've reunited. It's nice back again in Houston. He's owed a lot of money, so I see why Minnesota did it. But this is a great pickup, a great pivot by Houston.
Yeah, Dave, just to add in a few details about what you said, Minnesota is rumored to be $440 million in the hole, and there was more than $100 million left on Correa's deal. They're chipping in about $30 million, $30 to $33 million allegedly for that to make him disappear to Houston. Where he slots in Houston is an interesting situation as well because, as you pointed out, Isaac Paredes is out and could be out for the year. The team is expecting Jeremy Peña back, who is clearly a better shortstop option than Correa. And as you said, Correa has said that he is more than willing and happy to play third base. Yeah. The one part about Correa that I have always found telling, I think, is that he's a better player in real life than he is in fantasy. You know, you look at his numbers and you look at his StatCast data and you look at all the things that are part of that. He's got incredible bat speed. He always hits for a decent batting average. The power numbers have never really been what you would like them to be for a guy who was drafted in the number one pick overall, you know, 12, 13 years ago. However, he is a really steady ball player when he's able to play. And the idea, I think, behind playing third base is that he might be able to keep himself, you know, from getting compromised in a health standpoint by not having to go, you know, delve deep into the hole and make throws and, you know, take out slides to second base playing shortstop. This could be part of a preservation move for him there. I do like the move for Houston. Ownership there never really wanted to see him go. And he ended up going to the highest bidder, which was a surprise at the time that it was Minnesota. He does have that history of the ankle injury, so we'll have to watch that carefully. But I agree with you. I think he's a guy who slots right into the three spot in their lineup, and they'll see what they got from there. Moving on, your team, your adopted team, I guess we would say, Toronto, acquired Shane Bieber yesterday. And Bieber is yet to pitch this year, as we all know, due to his return from injury. So, Dave, I guess a two-part question. How do you see him fitting into Toronto's rotation? And part B of that, I guess, is he close to being healthy and ready to contribute?
Yeah, he's close to coming back. He's had a few rehab starts, and he's looked pretty good. He does need to stretch himself out a little bit more. But overall, he should be back within time to maybe give them about 6 weeks of starting pitching. Now, the hard part is with anyone returning from Tommy John is just the control and the command. You just never know how they're going to adapt to having to pitch a new way. If they can, you know, not go back to their old ways of throwing, and if they can just try their best to keep that ball in the strike zone. But I think overall, he is someone that should be, if he's available on waivers, I would be picking him up everywhere. I think the opportunity to play is going to be there. And I think, you know, that the team is playing well enough where he can get a win, even if he only goes five innings the way that they're playing right now. So I would be adding him anywhere and everywhere that I can. And I think he could be a league winner down the stretch for teams that are trying to make a push.
Do you think that there's any situation, any possibility that with the current landscape being what it is in Toronto, that with his addition to the rotation, that maybe Max Scherzer is bumped from the rotation? Because right now they're getting good results from Berríos and Gausman and Lauer and Bassett. Yeah. Is there any chance you think that Max is the odd man out here?
I think there is, and I think it almost should be, just based off of his injury history and his age and the fact that he had so many setbacks coming back. He could be a good long relief guy. Like, he could give you 3 to 4 innings, mm-hmm. but I don't see him projecting long-term as a starter. I do like Shane Bieber there in his place. To be fair, though, I mean, Eric Lauer has been pitching well. How much can he keep that up? That's a big question. But going back to your question about Max Scherzer, yeah, I would prefer to see Shane Bieber there and see Scherzer, you know, maybe just be a long reliever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lauer has been outstanding. I wrote about him last week in my starting pitcher waiver wire article over at RotoBaller. He's had a great July. He's had 5 starts in July, a 2.79 ERA, 30 strikeouts in 29 innings and 2 wins. He's been really, really phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they would bump him at this point. And his peripherals actually surprisingly look quite good. K percentage is 25.9%. The walk percentage is less than 6%. He's limiting barrels and hard contact. It's going to be interesting to see what they do there. I'm just curious as to what you thought about that. Another one that I'm curious about your thoughts on, Texas had some under-the-radar type of moves, and a lot of people were wondering if they were going to add or if they were going to stand pat or what they were going to do. And they decided to pony up yesterday, and they went and got Merrill Kelly from Arizona. Kelly slots in probably as their number 2 or their number 3 starter here, I would imagine. Obviously, Jacob deGrom is their ace. Nathan Eovaldi is in that mix as well for 2 or 3. Then Kelly, Patrick Corbin has been tremendous this year, which many people did not see coming. And they've been really getting good work out of Jack Leiter the last couple turns through the rotation. So maybe this leaves Kumar Rocker out in the cold, back in the bullpen, or maybe going back down to AAA. But what do you think the Rangers can expect to get out of Merrill Kelly the rest of the way? I always have felt like Kelly is a very underrated pitcher.
Yeah, he's very underrated, and I think part of it has to do with his age, that a lot of players, they see what he's done, and they see him at his age, and they kind of, they think either some regression will come or, you know, he can't get that much better, right? He is what he is. I think overall, I think you hit it on the head there when you said Kumar Rocker. I think he's going to be gone. I think he projects better as a reliever and possibly even a closer, just for how hard he throws and what he throws. It just feels like it's a much better profile for that. I do like Kelly a lot, and he's also good insurance there just in case, knock on wood, they decide to shut down Jacob deGrom. Not saying that I've heard that they will, not saying that they should, mm-hmm. but I know he's thrown a lot of innings thus far, and if they want to make the playoffs and they want to make a run for the playoffs, they will need him in the playoffs. And sure. He's already thrown, I'm going to load it up here, but I think it's, 123 already. And he hasn't thrown that many innings since 2019. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, at 37 years old, he's not getting any younger either. So as much as we've always said, well, if he is Jacob deGrom, at some point, he's also a human. And the human body can only take so much. So I'm not trying to make this into existence, and I'm not saying I've heard it, but there's a chance that they maybe lower his innings just so that they can use him in the playoffs.
Well, if Chris Torres is listening right now, he's about to jump on here and jump down your throat about them shutting down DeGrom, because we know how important DeGrom is to a couple of his teams, including his main event team. He's also very important on a couple of my teams as well. What I like about this move for Houston, or not Houston, I mean for Texas, I apologize, and it flies a little under the radar, I think, is that now they have that, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit, they have that rugged big three that they can use in playoffs with a lot of experience, guys that know how to get big outs when it counts. I mean, Eovaldi and Kelly have pitched in World Series in big games. DeGrom has also pitched in a lot of big games. They have the ability to be able to navigate. Now, I don't, scoring enough runs could be an issue with, you know, their lineup, but they've been doing a pretty good job of that lately, and their bullpen is a little spotty as well still. But this puts them in a position that if they do make it to the playoffs, we always know that the playoffs is a bit of a crapshoot, and they've got three pretty good starters there that I would be very comfortable starting in any playoff game if I was a major league skipper, which I am not, unfortunately.
Can I add one thing?
Please.
I know this is a safe space because my wife isn't here, but I just want to say the words, I was wrong about Jacob DeGrom. I didn't think he'd last this long, and I didn't think he'd do as well, but let the record show that I have the ability to say I was wrong.
Yeah, duly noted. We're going to put it down. It's 1:17 on August 1st, 1:17 p.m. Central Time, 2:17 your time, Eastern Time. Dave Funnel admits that he is wrong. Mark it down because it doesn't happen all that often. So we will hold you to that. Now, DeGrom, I don't think anybody could have seen that coming exactly. I mean, he was healthy at the end of last year, but how much can you really take away from the last parts of the year? Although you and I have had a lot of conversations offline about the idea of, boy, it really helps us as fantasy players to see a guy come back and make four or five really good starts at the end of the season. It helps build that confidence that maybe you can bid on that guy in the next year's drafts.
Yeah.
So there is something to be said there. Okay, Dave, we're going to switch to another topic here, and I wanted to kind of get your opinion on some of these things. We're going to talk heavily about bullpens here in a few minutes, just for all of you who are wondering about what's going on and the tumultuous nature of covering bullpens, especially over the last couple of days with a lot of changes. But we're going to talk a little bit about some non-bullpen rankings here, and I'm going to get Dave's perspective on some teams and moves that he felt that he liked. So we're going to talk about the top five teams' moves that Dave liked and the bottom five teams' moves that he disliked. We're going to do that after we come back from this commercial message. Okay, Dave, we're back. And so in looking at your list of teams, the moves that you did like, I was surprised a little bit to see a couple of the teams that were in here. And I'm going to start with the first one that surprised me, which was Baltimore. You liked the moves that they made. Why did you like those?
I liked the moves that they made primarily because they were already out of it. And it was a disappointing year. A lot of it had to do with injuries, which are, you know, a lot of times you can't really control those, or, you know, it's one of those seasons that just gets away from you. Mm-hmm. But they had a lot of assets there that weren't necessarily building blocks for their future. And they had assets that other teams could have used. So I like that they were able to trade away Ryan O'Hearn and capitalize on Ramon Laureano. Laureano's been outstanding for them. And I think for the last 365 days, he's been one of the best hitters in baseball. It's outstanding if you look at his numbers. But they were able to load up their farm system with all of these trades. They traded away Cedric Mullins, and they got some really good prospects. They traded away their bullpen pieces, which were expiring, for prospects. And they traded away Charlie Morton, who was not going to be, you know, part of their future, for more prospects. Mm-hmm. And I was reading today, Jake Rill, he wrote an article about, you know, about their, about what they did. And they acquired 15 players that were taken in the last 2 years of the drafts. And these are players that they can build on, they can enhance, and they can try and get into their lineup probably by 2027.
Let me ask you a question about that though.
Yeah.
We've talked about this quite a few times. Do you feel that at some point Baltimore has to really go into this and spend some money on getting somebody in here? Because my word, They have more prospects and more prospect capital than just about any team in baseball at this time. And they did not trade any of those name pieces at the trade deadline. You know, they ended up holding on to Felix Bautista, who is injured, but will be their closer again next year. So that's a spot that is filled. But they kept Holiday. They kept Westberg. They kept Couser. They kept Mayo. Do you see this as a problem at any point, just to continue to gather prospects and hoping that they're catching lightning in a bottle, but then never spend big money on trying to get an ace? Because if there's a team in baseball that doesn't need an ace more than the Orioles does, not right now, but down the road for next year, boy, I mean, I would be hard pressed to name a team that's more in need of a staff ace.
I like what they've done in the sense that now there are spots for these prospects that they've been hoarding. Like Kobe Mayo is going to get a chance here to show the world that he is what we thought he could be. A healthy Jordan Westberg, he's going to be playing every day. We're going to get Ryan Mountcastle back, and I think he's going to have a spot open every single day. So I think what I love what they did was they've now made room for those players. Will they have learned their lesson? I don't know, because it'll be interesting to see in the offseason if they can sign the pitcher that, you know, like we were just talking about, going after free agents. I do think they need to sign some pitching because we learned today that Grayson Rodriguez might have that surgery is on the table. So he may not pitch again in 2025. And we don't even know what the operation would be heading into 2026. So to your point, yeah, I do think that they do need to spend some money on some pitching because they can't win with the pitching they have now. But I like what they did in the sense that now these prospects and this offense will get a chance to grow, a chance to learn, and a chance to improve for next year.
To your point on the pitching front, the Orioles do have a number of pitchers that are injured. As you said, Grayson Rodriguez sounds like he's a candidate for a debridement surgery, which is still an extensive surgery. It's not a UCL surgery, but it's still arm surgery and something that we'd have to be concerned about. But they're also expecting back at some point Kyle Bradish and Tyler Wells, who had eaten some innings for them over the last couple of seasons, is still recovering from the internal brace procedure that he had. I think it was last June. So he might be in line to make a couple of starts here towards the end of the season. But to your point, they really are looking at the future. Their current rotation, is not what they had planned. And Trevor Rogers, Sugano, Brandon Young, and Dean Kremer.
Yeah,
there's a lot to be desired there. So the Orioles are doing more of a retooling, I guess, is what we would say, than a complete sell-off. But they did sell off the pieces that you would expect them to be able to sell off and maybe get some profit from. Dave, I'm going to shift over to the American League West here and ask you about two teams that were on your list for moves that you liked. We already talked a little bit about Houston, so I'll let you talk about them. But then I also want to ask you about Seattle because you like their moves as well. So let's start with Houston first.
Yeah, I love what they did. It was funny that when I was messaging you guys yesterday, I talked about how there's only going to be two teams representing the American League. And then Houston went out and got Carlos Correa. And then they went out and got Jesus Sanchez. And I really like what they did. I like we talked about earlier with Correa, I like that they got some outfield depth with Jesus Sanchez. They have a lot of guys coming back that are injured that are going to be able to help them. Reading today, Brian McTaggart, he wrote about how this is all going to play out. So Altuve will get at-bats at second and in left, and he'll get some DH at-bats, which we feel will be important to give him some rest. While Yordan Alvarez is out, which who knows how long that'll
be. I think talking about Yordan Alvarez is the only thing that I can think about that would make you use vulgarity.
And I might. I almost did there. He's going to play left field until Alvarez comes back. But there will be some days where Jesus Sanchez, who's not a bad bat, and he's been somewhat productive while being in Miami. So I like what they did there. There were some holes in the lineup. They were able to fill those holes. And quite frankly, they've had holes all year and they've still had one of the league's best records. Mm-hmm. It's been outstanding to see what they've been able to do and get out of the players that they have. So to add two players like Carlos Correa and Jose Sanchez, and not to mention Ramon Urias, who's good backup depth, that's not a bad team right now. So I really like what Houston did yesterday, and I think they positioned themselves to, like I said, maybe represent the American League.
You still have to beat Houston in the American League. And I know that a lot of people will look at them and say, well, they're down. It's a down year for them. But they still have some bats that can absolutely annihilate you in this lineup, too. I mean, Altuve, Christian Walker, Correa, Cam Smith has shown flashes. Yainer Diaz, when he's healthy and ready to go. Alvarez, if he's ever ready to come back and play again. They have some really good pieces there. And they've got some young pieces, too, like Bryce Matthews and Jacob Melton, who are going to make contributions as well. But to your point, and this is where I wanted to piggyback off of what you said, they've got some pitchers coming back from injury that could really pay them dividends in the playoff, depending on how healthy they are. Obviously, everyone knows Hunter Brown is their ace. Framber Valdez is 1B there. They would definitely need a third and possibly a fourth starter should they get into the playoffs. But Spencer Arrighetti is near a return, who was dominant in the second half last year. And they're also waiting on Christian Javier, who is actually on a rehab assignment right now. And JP France is also, I think, at some point, even though he's got that shoulder capsule recovery, which can take forever to come back from. My point is they have some weapons coming back, so they did not feel that they needed to go all in and try to get any type of rotation pieces there. And when you turn over to a bullpen, I know we're going to talk about bullpens in a few minutes, but their triple-headed monster of Hader, Abreu, and Brian King right now is nearly unbeatable. They are going to be a tough out in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Let's switch over to Seattle. Has long been questioned for their philosophy of what they're doing with a wonderful pitching staff and not having much of an offense to go along with it. But they made some steps this week, didn't they, Dave, to kind of correct that? Talk a little bit about what they did.
Yeah, this week, they didn't really do much yesterday, but this week they added Eugenio Suarez and Josh Naylor. And those are two excellent pieces. Suarez, who's been known to play, like, he played in Seattle, so he should be somewhat used to what it's like to hit there. And Josh Naylor, I mean, the guy, I don't know, somehow he's running a lot right now. So they've got their hot corners taken care of, which they needed something other than Julio Rodriguez, Cal Raleigh, and sometimes a Rosarena. They needed something else there. So they went out and they got two, what I thought are pretty good hitters to help their lineup. And you look up and down their lineup now, they're top five. And if he's having a good day, Polanco, maybe they have six good hitters there to match up with their already outstanding rotation and their really good bullpen. So I really like what Seattle did there. And they didn't really have to give up much to get the help that they needed.
Yeah, it's interesting to note what they did and how we look at that. Last night, their lineup, I don't know if you saw it, but you know, to your point, they made their moves earlier in the week, and so those guys were all there. J.P. Crawford had been batting leadoff there, and last night they flipped him down to the eighth spot and put a Rosarena up back at the top. So the top of their order was a Rosarena, Raleigh, J-Rod, Naylor, then Suarez. That's a pretty good top five, to your point. And they didn't really need to do anything to their pitching because they obviously have good pitching, although they did acquire Caleb Ferguson, which is a little bit under the radar pick up there, which will help them having another lefty in their bullpen to go with Gabe Spear. Okay, so we know what Seattle did. Seattle is going to be a team to be reckoned with there. We're going to shift over to the National League West, where there were some teams that made moves that you liked, and you liked what San Diego did.
I did. I really liked what they did. Now, they gave up a lot in order to get it, but they did what, what other teams were doing is they fortified their bullpen. To get Mason Miller was an outstanding coup. They gave up a lot. They gave up, what was it, their best prospect.
Yeah, they gave up Leo DeVries in that trade, who's probably the biggest name prospect moved at the deadline this year.
Yeah, which is rare to have, you know, really top prospects that young to get moved, but you do what you got to do, right? I found it quite interesting, though. I was reading today, AJ Casavell for the Padres. He said, where was it, that I can't find it, but they said, we've got him for 4 years. We've got Mason Miller for 4 years. And for now, he's going to be in the bullpen. He could transition into being a starter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to happen in the future, but for this year, he'll stay in the bullpen. But I found it quite interesting that they might transition him there. But I really liked what else they did. They were the team that got Laureano and O'Hearn from the Orioles. They needed outfield depth. They needed help. They were not running out much talent out there. They also upgraded at catcher with Freddie Fermin, who was an underrated backup mm-hmm. in Kansas City, who did a great job of allowing Salvador Perez to play DH and first base. So they upgraded there, and they even strengthened their rotation depth with Nestor Cortez mm-hmm. and JP Sears, actually. Mm-hmm. Forgot about mm-hmm. that. So mm-hmm. I really like what they did. I don't know if they're the World Series favorites for me right now, but man, it is close. I really like what they did.
Yeah, that we're going to talk about bullpens here in a little bit, but they really did some nice work there, it looks like, to get there. And you always know, you know, every year it's always sort of a running joke that AJ Preller is always going to be all in as much as he can be and make moves regardless of what it does to his farm system and how it depletes it. And he certainly has done that this year. I mean, they've turned over a third of their lineup in the last 24 hours with adding O'Hearn, Laureano, and Fermin. They don't have a lot of bench depth there. They needed to replace Gavin Sheets, who's been awful over the last 6 weeks. Could have told you that was coming as a White Sox fan, but nobody asked me. and they do have some interesting rotation pieces there too, with Michael King will be back at some point. I know he's working his way back. And Nestor Cortez, once he returns, I could see a situation where he goes back to the rotation and JP Sears goes back to the bullpen. Their bullpen is a knockout waiting to happen. Preview of bullpen topic later on. I do believe that Robert Suarez will continue to close there and Mason Miller will work in a setup role, but we can talk about that in a few minutes. And Dave, you also like what Arizona did. And Arizona has taken some criticism here in the last few hours as to what they did. But talk a little bit about what Mike Hazen did there and why you like it.
I just like that they were sellers. They had a lot of assets to sell. They had a lot of expiring contracts. And when you have that, and I'm going to throw this out, even in fantasy and in dynasty leagues, if you see that you're not going to win and you have a lot of expiring contracts, you post to your league and you say, I'm selling this, 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 and you get what you can get. And that's what Arizona did. They traded away Suarez, Naylor, Grichuk, Merrill Kelly, and they got rid of the contract of Jordan Montgomery, which was
remarkable.
Yeah. So they did a great job. They can have a reset, and they bumped up their farm system, which was great because they needed some extra oomph there. So I really like what Arizona did. And
I think they really need to figure out if some of these guys that they have there can play. You know, they've had limited opportunities for some of these guys, but giving a full season of at-bats, you know, second half season of at-bats to Tyler Locklear, for example, playing first base, and Adrian Del Castillo, you know, DHing and maybe doing some catching at certain points, Alec Thomas, Blaze Alexander, these guys that have been prospects for a while, see what you got there and see what those guys can do, because we know that they are really savvy there. They will retool. They will be back shortly, too. Zach Gallen is going out on an expiring contract, but there's a lot of rumor that he will accept a qualifying offer to remain in Arizona. So they've got some really good pieces there in terms of rebuilding their rotation. Their bullpen is a little bit decimated right now, but we'll talk about that later. Your honorable mention team here for teams that you liked with the moves that they made was the Dodgers.
Yes. I'll make it quick. I didn't think they had to do too much. They have a lot of injured pieces coming back for the playoffs. They've got Snell coming back soon. Roki Sasaki should be back maybe by September. they added a few smaller pieces here and there, and they didn't really have to trade much to get it. And they even bolstered their farm system. So I thought they did a great job. They just, you know, little things here and there. So I thought they kept pace with the Padres in the West. And I still think they're the favorites to win the World Series.
Yes. Blake Snell, who I almost always initially refer to as Ian Snell, who was a pitcher a few years back that some of you who listen might have heard of before. Blake Snell is going to return tomorrow. He's being activated off the IL tomorrow. They still have a great lineup. They still have great depth. They're going to find three or four good starting pitchers that are healthy, and then they're going to leave it to their bullpen to try to get them out of it towards the end of games here in the playoffs. So that will be interesting. They were a team that's really built, as you said, to not have to acquire much at the deadline. And they did acquire some pieces, but they were all useful pieces there without really kind of splitting the bank open any more than what they did. Yeah. Dave, moving along to teams that moves you disliked. Let's talk about both of the Chicago teams because they're both on your list. Let's start there.
Yeah, I'll start first with your White Sox, and it really just has to do with, they were my honorable mention, but they were, it just really has to do with not trading away Luis Robert.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they should have traded him in the offseason. I'm surprised they didn't trade him throughout the season, and I don't know if they're just asking for too much or what, but there comes a point where if he's not producing for you, you have to either accept that loss and move on, because you could ask the world, like you could ask for the world for someone who should be doing something, but it's been a long time mm-hmm. since we've seen him do what we think he could and should do. So for that reason, that they weren't able to trade away Robert, that they're my honorable mention.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk here about them moving him, what they were asking for. They still think that he is a star player. The great defense, the speed is still there. He's got 27 stolen bases. They were trying to capture, I think, the fact that in July, a lot of people don't realize this, but he's hit 353 in July with three home runs and five steals. So they were trying to capitalize on that. The talk here is that they're going to try again to move him again in the wintertime. Hopefully he's able to have a second half where he remains healthy and continues to post those kind of numbers and rebuild. But I think you're right. I mean, they were asking about Luis Angel Acuña and or Mark Vientos from the Mets in return for Luis Robert. And I think that they were asking for too much. This isn't 2 years ago when he had, you know, 38 home runs and 20 stolen bases and hit 264. Yeah. He's not that guy right now. So agreed with you.
And with every year that they don't do it, it's one less year of control. I don't know what his contract's like, but it's, I know he was under contract for a while. So the longer you wait, the less the return will be simply for the fact that the teams can't control him for that long.
He has two $20 million a year options left on his contract.
Okay.
So the Sox can buy him out for $2 million in the winter, which they won't do, or they can give him the $20 million. That's going to be an interesting thing to watch happen. Yeah. Interesting, though, too, you also listed the Cubs here, and I couldn't agree more with you on this one. Being a Chicago person and watching what they did and then didn't do, I was a little bit surprised. Talk a little bit about why you didn't like their moves at the deadline.
I expected more out of them. I expected them to make a splash. I know that their offense hasn't been what it once was. So I thought maybe they'd go for that third baseman, or they would go for, I don't know. They have some nice farm assets that they could have dangled out there to get the player that could have put them over. But instead they got Willy Castro.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, he's reliable and all that, but is he the reason why you're going to win a World Series? I don't think so. And even their bullpen, they got Andrew Kittredge and Taylor Rogers, but, you know, look around the league and look what everyone else did. You should have been making, well, not you, the Cubs should have been making those kind of moves, some impact moves to A, to keep up with the Brewers, and B, just to make that push and, you know, make that push in the playoffs. And they, I didn't think they did that. And I think that might be their down.
Yeah, there was a lot of consternation with the thinking that the Cubs really needed to go after a starting pitcher that was a playoff caliber, you know, starting pitcher. As a, if the playoffs were to start today, I'm guessing that their playoff rotation would be probably Imanaga, Boyd, and maybe Cade Horton, who's been hit or miss. Right now, they don't have Jameson Taillon. They don't have Justin Steele's out for the year. They're waiting on Javier Assad, but I don't know that any of those guys move. Steele would move the needle, but obviously he's out for the year with the Tommy John revision surgery. They really did not do anything to improve their rotation. Soroka is okay. He's better in the bullpen, as we know. Yeah. He's been okay, but it's going to be interesting to see. And we'll talk a little bit about bullpens here in a few minutes, but I agree with you. I don't think the Cubs did enough. Switching over to the Cubs brethren in the NL Central, talk a little bit about Milwaukee and Pittsburgh. You didn't like what they did.
Yeah, I didn't like what Milwaukee did simply because they're at the top right now and they didn't really keep up with other teams that were making the moves. And I think that's something that even in fantasy, that's hard for people to comprehend. And it's something for me too. I do it too. It's just, if you're ahead and you see the teams behind you trying, you know, making those moves, it's something that you have to keep be cognizant of. And maybe you have to also improve because that team's going to come closer to you and you got to keep up. And they didn't really do that. Like they traded away Nestor Cortez, who's going to be back soon. And they traded away they got Shelby Miller and Jordan Montgomery. Montgomery's not going to pitch for them. And Miller, I thought he was out for the season, but they're bringing in an injured pitcher. And they acquired Danny Jansen to maybe replace William Contreras. That's not going to do it. And I think they fumbled the ball here at the, it was first and goal for them. And I think they fumbled.
Well, they're an interesting squad to watch. I don't know how much you watch them. I watched them quite a bit because they're sort of my adopted NL team besides my beloved White Sox. But they have a really good team. They do a lot of the little things well that you need to do. They catch the ball. They move runners along. They take extra bases. They're really good at that stuff. And I thought, wow, they're going to probably move on from Andrew Vaughn, right? But Andrew Vaughn has been hotter than heck over the course of the last 3 weeks since they brought him up. How long is he going to be able to continue that? By need, they almost have to DH Christian Yelich to keep him healthy, but they also have a banged up catcher in Contreras, who there's been a lot of rumor that that thumb is really way worse off than what people have let on, and that they acquired Jansen in order to be able to give him a break behind the plate or let him go, but to the IL for the year. But they can't do that because they're in it to, they're supposed to be in it to win it. Their rotation is quite good. Their bullpen depth is quite good. What they really are lacking is that big bopper, that, you know, potential third baseman that could have helped a la Eugenio Suarez or our first baseman a la Josh Naylor, or maybe even like a Nathaniel Lowe or somebody like that that could have filled in. Even Josh Bell would probably be better than what they're doing, but they didn't get any of those guys. So you're right about that. And then finally, you talked a little bit about Boston. And Boston had some interesting moves in that they acquired Steven Matz and Dustin May, but didn't really do anything else.
Yeah, it was very disappointing that they didn't make that move. And even the moves that they did make were very, very weird. First, for the moves they didn't make, I know that there were rumors out there that Joe Ryan would have cost them Jaron Duran, and I think Willier Abreu. But I get that that's a big cost, but man, they have a lot of outfielders already,
right?
Why not make that move? Why not make that jump and get Joe Ryan, who is pitching like an absolute stud right now? Get that ace, because they're already going to be limiting Garrett Crochet's innings for the rest of the season. If you're going to make a push, you need at least two pitchers, and I don't think they have that. So they didn't really go all in there. And even the moves that they did make to get Dustin May, man, he's already pitched far more innings than, you know, he has in a long time. And they traded away one of the prospects that they got in the Rafael Devers trade. First of all, Dustin May's also, he's a free agent, I think, after this year. So there's almost nothing to show for the trade of Rafael Devers. And now you're bringing in a pitcher who may not pitch much longer for you or be overworked and overwhelmed. I don't know what Boston is doing. I don't know if they froze or if they have this long-term plan in mind, but I give them an F for yesterday.
Yeah, it was a weird situation. You know, you look at what they did and then didn't do, and you're kind of left scratching your head. I was wondering if with the acquisition of Mats and May, what they were doing is trying to bridge that, like you said, and keep their starters healthy for a potential deeper playoff run. You know, Giolito's back from surgery, but he's already thrown a lot as well. You know, maybe May and Mats can spell Crochet and Giolito a little bit with the shortened outings that they're going to be giving those guys. Because if the playoffs started today, their top three would probably be Crochet, Giolito, and Brian Bello. Are you happy enough with that as a Boston fan to go into the playoffs with, you know, one surefire thing and then two guys that are a little bit of a crapshoot? I don't know. Also, I was a little bit surprised that they didn't make a move to try to strengthen their corner infield positions there. Bregman obviously is playing third, but they really could have used somebody at first base besides the you know, combination of Toro and Romy Gonzalez, and they did not do that. And so I don't know if this is sort of a, you know, quick retool on the fly, like, hey, we're going to try it, but we're five games out. We don't really think we're going to make it. Although they do have a 61% playoff chance right now, according to Fangraphs, you know, so they should have maybe been a little stronger, but I'm guessing that what you said is right. They probably did not want to trade Duran. They probably did not want to trade Willier Abreu. Both guys are starting for them right now in their outfield. That might have left them a little bit bare. So interesting to kind of take a look at that. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit about bullpens. And I'll have some thoughts on that and moves that were made and also some specs that we could look at after those trades. We'll be back in 2 minutes. I don't know why I said we would be back in 2 minutes because we're not on TV. Do I feel like I'm on TV? I don't have a face for TV. I have a face for radio, and I have a voice.
Come on now. You look great.
Yeah. So here's the thing. The price to acquire starting pitching this trade deadline was exorbitant, and we've examined some of that in the show already. The strategy for teams that were really in the playoff hunt seemed to be to upgrade the bullpens, not necessarily even the back end of the bullpens, but also just the middle relief core to try to shorten the game. And it really seems like what teams are doing is sort of following the Los Angeles Dodger plan from last year that was successful for them. Use three starters in the playoffs, hope to get four or five good innings out of each one of those guys, and then turn it over to your bullpen and let your bullpen, based on matchups, try to get those last 12 to 15 outs of the game, depending on where you are at. And so what we see teams doing a lot of nowadays is taking guys that normally would be closers or normally would be high leverage guys and pushing them down into the fifth or the sixth inning in the playoff games and seeing what they can get to. The idea being that they can rely on those guys to go max effort, thus max velocity for an inning at a time, and then, you know, keep their starting pitchers use at a minimum so they can try to keep them fresh as they get into an extended playoff run. So some of the teams really seem to follow that mantra this year that they were going to really work on building those bullpens. First example that I can think of there, Dave, was really the Yankees. Now, the Yankees have Devin Williams at the back end there, and everyone knows how great he has been, even though he has been a little bit homer prone over the course of the last couple of weeks here. But he has clearly been their closer. And Luke Weaver had come off the IL, and there had been a lot of speculation that he would get some chances, but he did not. He's been used as a you know, setup guy in the seventh or eighth inning and pitching multiple innings. But what the Yankees did yesterday that really threw a lot of people off was they acquired David Bednar from Pittsburgh. They also acquired Camilo Duvall from San Francisco, and they also acquired Jake Bird from the Colorado Rockies as well, and sort of rebuilt that back end of their bullpen on the fly. Some of you might be wondering, well, why would the Yankees want to have four closers? Well, this is going to help them shorten those games in the playoffs, and they've been struggling, as you guys know, to kind of get the ball to Devin Williams at the end over the last couple of weeks. But the bigger issue here is that Devin Williams and Luke Weaver can both walk at the end of the year. And so now they've insulated themselves by having Bednar and Doval there as under contract moving forward next year to replace Williams and Weaver if they need to do that. As of right now, I would continue to look for Williams to be the closer, Bednar and Doval to be the setup in the seventh and the eighth, and Luke Weaver most likely to be that bridge guy that gets to them. Dave, what did you think about what the Yankees did there?
I love what they did. They've got four closers. They have four closers. So if Williams struggles, you put in Weaver. If Weaver struggles, bump up Bednar. Like, it's just one after another. It's just ensuring that that the Yankees can close out games if and when they need to. And it even helps not to wear out these relievers as well. Maybe Devin Williams doesn't go on back-to-back nights, and, you know, like, Bednar can close for them one night. So I really like what they did, and I like what a lot of these teams did by stacking them up. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right with what you said there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, and there could be some give and take there depending on what happens, but there definitely are some options there. And Jake Bird is an underestimated guy as well. He's going to be a nice guy for them to have in the fifth or sixth inning as well to kind of help them bridge that gap as well. I like what Tampa did adding Griffin Jacks yesterday, even though it cost them Taj Bradley. Felt like they were kind of done with Taj Bradley. They couldn't get over the hump with fixing what was wrong with him. And in the process, they acquired one of the premier setup men in baseball to go with Edwin Uceta to set up Pete Fairbanks. Similar to what's going on in New York, Jacks might not necessarily close there right in the short term, but Fairbanks is a free agent at the end of the year. Jacks could step in. Jacks is under contract through 2027. So he could definitely be somebody that gets some very key outs for Tampa Bay down the stretch. And let's face facts too. Tampa this year does not look like they're in it, so they're kind of retooling for the next thing as well. Jacks will definitely be part of that, as will Edwin Uceta. The Cleveland situation, which we have not talked about at all here, with Emmanuel Clase being I don't want to say suspended because he's not suspended, but being put on the inactive list, the restricted list, I should say, for the foreseeable future based on these gambling allegations and the investigation that's going on, that seems to have elevated Cade Smith into the closer role. If Cade Smith is available on your waiver wire, snag him immediately. I don't know that Class A will be back at any time soon to kind of get that role back. I think Smith will continue to get those save chances there for Cleveland. Cleveland has struggled. They're at 500, but that you can make an argument that they're, you know, also in it. But if you can get Cade Smith, I would grab him and use him in a closing role on your team if you're able to. And a team that was interesting too, that we've talked about quite a bit, Dave, is Detroit. And Detroit did not go out and get a high leverage, you know, closer type guy that we think of as being a high velo guy. They got Kyle Finnegan. Curious what your thoughts were on them adding Kyle Finnegan there. Now, Kyle Finnegan does get saves. He did get saves in Washington. He was DFA'd last year, last winter. They brought him back on a smaller contract. He's been pretty successful in the role. What do you think of the Tigers adding Finnegan and not adding someone to really combat for the closer's role with Vest?
I think they wanted just somebody with experience just in case, you know, Will Vest falters. They've tried it with Holton this year, and he just hasn't looked as dominant as he was last year. And I know Tommy Canley, too. He's had some ups and downs. So I think getting somebody like Finnegan who has closing experience, who has some saves in his portfolio, I think that's a good move. Now, will Vest, you know, lose the role? I don't think so. He's done well enough, I think, this year just to at least keep the job or keep some of the job. But having Kyle Finnegan with that experience is a great backup just in case.
Yeah, I think Detroit is it's kind of fun to think about. I had been thinking about it wrong. I thought they would be in the market for getting a Joan Duran or somebody like that that would really kind of replace Vest and bump him down a level. But they seem pretty content with the job that Vest is doing. The thing that I found kind of intriguing about this was that in Finnegan, they added – essentially, they sort of are inventing in Frankenstein in a reliever here that can get ground ball outs. I mean, between him and Holton – they have really high ground ball percentages and really limit hard contact. And so I guess what they're thinking is, hey, we're not going to go all in on a big time, big name closer, but we're going to kind of nickel and dime you here and get some guys that can get some soft contact. They don't really have a lot of other options there to close if something should happen to Vest. I mean, Tommy Canley was good for a while, but he's kind of been bumped back down to a middle role now. And I don't really see anybody that's hurt on their disabled list right now. That can really kind of jump in. Although another move that they made yesterday that flew way under the radar was getting Paul Sewald. So Paul Sewald does have some closer experience, obviously, back in his experience in Seattle. So that'll be interesting to see how they play that out. But I was surprised in a way that Detroit didn't do that, but then I felt like I understood it after that. The big move, the big guy that moved was Joan Duran to Philadelphia. Philadelphia definitely needed to do something to address that back end of their rotation. I don't know why I keep saying rotation. The back end of their bullpen, they needed to really address that. And boy, did they ever by going out and getting Duran. They got the best closer available on the market. And he's going to be their closer, bumping Orion Kerkerine and Matt Strom back down to set up roles in the seventh and eighth, and then also allowing Jordan Romano to try to be able to find himself again and see if he can become something of a weapon down the stretch for them. They also have a really good lefty there in Tanner Banks that a lot of people don't talk about, but they're going to be a tough out. I also think that there's a possibility here that another thing that they could do, not saying that they will, in the playoffs is Wheeler obviously is going to be one of their top guys. Sanchez will be one of their top guys. Don't know if they'll get Nola back, but Jesus Luzardo out of the bullpen could be a dynamic weapon as well. Just something to earmark for later.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but that's, I could totally see that, especially as a lefty.
Yeah. I think if you do the math on it, right, you look at it and say, our team's going to use three good starters in the playoffs. Are they going to use four? I guess some will use four. They could also use Ranger Suarez in that situation, who's been pretty good. Taiwan Walker and Luzardo would be guys I think that would be natural fits moving to their bullpen. It just gives them a little bit more depth and a little bit more length in their bullpen if they need to be able to go to it by using those guys. So that definitely will be fun to watch. Duran on a team where he can be unleashed is going to be fun to watch. I liked what Texas did. Texas kind of flew under the radar a little bit with what they did. They did not acquire a Kenley Jansen or a Raisel Iglesias like I thought they might. Instead, what they did was they've put their trust, it looks like, in Robert Garcia at this point and built behind him with Phil Maton and Danny Kalum. John Gray is also in there too, and I think John Gray could get an extended look at as a relief piece there as well. So that'll be kind of fun to watch down there in Texas and see what they do. Kind of moving quickly, fast forwarding a little. I love what the Mets did.
Yes,
boy, did they get funky with what they did or what? Mm-hmm. It was surprising to me what they did in terms of, you know, looking at it from a perspective of their bullpen setup. But Edwin Diaz is clearly going to still be their closer, but they did acquire Ryan Helsley from the Cardinals and Tyler Rogers from the Giants. So that allows them to use those guys in setup roles and then bump back really good guys like Gregory Soto, Reed Garrett, Ryan Stanek. They also got Brooks Raley back. They've got a really dynamic bullpen that gives you a lot of looks. They got side armers. They got three-quarter length guys. They got guys that can throw 99. They got guys that throw 82 and get quick outs. It's going to be really fascinating to watch them down the stretch because I think that the Mets are really kind of built to win right now, and they can hit. We know that. So if they have the bullpen behind them to be able to support, they'll be in really good shape. And this also includes if Diaz should go through a period of time where he struggles, they can use Helsley. They have a 1A and 1B comment there. I love what they did almost as much as I love what San Diego did with getting Mason Miller, which we talked about a little earlier. I know that we're kind of skipping all over the map here, but the Padres really had done a nice job to shorten games as well. I think Suarez will stay the closer. Miller has been a little bit off this year. For anybody who's had him on their team, you know that the ERA is over 4. He's been a little suspect in certain places. The K rate is just absolutely video game like. But they have Jason Adam, Adrian Morahone, who's been fantastic and a revelation as a lefty, Jeremiah Estrada. They go all the way down to Yuki Matsui being a guy that they can just throw at you whenever they want to. So I love what those guys did. The Cubs, I felt the same way, could have done more like we talked about earlier, Dave. They could have done a little bit more with what they did. They added Andrew Kittredge and Taylor Rogers. They seem to believe in Daniel Palencia. I don't know how long I believe in him in terms of being deep in a playoff game. If I want Palencia up there facing the Dodgers, I'm not sure how I feel about that. That's not an indictment of him. He's a young guy. He's been very good for them. But I just don't know if they did enough to really kind of put themselves into that conversation. Shelby Miller went to Milwaukee. He is still on the IL, but they're looking at him being back in the next week to 10 days. He is not out for the season. They're looking at him being a weapon there. Obviously, I think Trevor Megill will continue to close there, but Miller would be another nice weapon. Okay, that was bullpens in about 10 minutes. We just kind of shot through those things, but I also want to give you, as we hit the 1 hour mark here, I want to give you some specs. If you're looking for guys that you should add over the waiver wire this weekend, guys that could get opportunities to close, I'm not saying that these guys are closers. I just want to mind that. As Dave said earlier in the show very presciently, we don't really know yet. We're going to have to wait and see how it's going to go down tonight and tomorrow to see what these teams that have made these moves are doing in terms of who's going to be in their bullpen. One team that did a lot of subtraction yesterday, a lot of subtractions, was Minnesota. And there's a lot of speculation as to who that closer will be. The only guy that they have there that really has any level of closing experience is Cole Sands. And I think he will probably be the guy who gets the bulk of chances there just based on the fact that they don't have anybody else. They added a bunch of guys today. They added four or five guys to their bullpen from the minor leagues, none of whom I think are worthy of being considered in that closer role. Look for Sands to get the first crack there. I don't think there are going to be a lot of opportunities there because I think Minnesota is going to be pretty bad the rest of the way. One that I'll be watching really, really closely, a guy that I've been touting for the better part of a month now, is Jack Perkins for the Athletics in Sacramento. There's been a lot of talk that he might go to the rotation as well, doing some replacement there of J.P. Sears. I've not heard that that's what they're going to do. Perkins did get the save on Wednesday night when Mason Miller was unavailable because they were trying to move him, not because he was hurt. I think Perkins would be the most natural fit there. They do also have a couple of other young guys there that could help them out in that situation. Michael Kelly has been really good, but doesn't have the high-powered stuff, nor does Sean Newcomb. I think it's Perkins. Maybe Sterner gets a look. Maybe Elvis Alvarado, who's in the middle relief, gets a look. But I would put a circle around Perkins and put a bid in on him this weekend because I think he's going to be the guy. Washington moved Kyle – oh, my God, why can't I remember his last name? Finnegan. My God, what is wrong with me? They move Kyle Finnegan, and so there's a lot of speculation there as to who's going to get opportunities for them the rest of the way. Jose A. Ferrer is probably their best bullpen piece. He led the team with 19 holds, but his ERA is almost 5. He's got a 20% strikeout rate. I'm guessing just because he's the last man standing that he might be the guy who gets some opportunities. But another name to kind of put a circle around to look at is Connor Pilkington. He's a former White Sox pick that didn't really pan out for the White Sox, went to Cleveland for a while. He's been with Washington now for the better part of a couple of weeks. He's showing some potential there to maybe be a guy that is of interest to fantasy league players there. We'll watch and let you know how that goes on. Moving over to Pittsburgh, where Bednar was traded. There's been a lot of speculation that Dennis Santana was going to get moved as well. He did not. I think Dennis Santana is the short-term closer there. the long-term closer there, I think, is going to come down to a combination of Braxton Ashcraft and Isaac Mattson, who I've been talking about for a while. Mattson's been really stellar in a setup role. Ashcraft looks like he could be the guy who would be a great closer if they decide to not move him to the bullpen. My hedge is that they've talked about giving him some time in the rotation now in the late summer. Don't know what's going to happen there, but Santana looks to be the closer in the short term. A lot of people have reached out and asked about St. Louis. I think naturally people move to Jojo Romero as being the guy who's going to be the closer. I'm not sure that I agree with you who say that Romero is really a good setup guy. They've got a couple other options there that are more intriguing than Romero, one being Riley O'Brien and the other being Kyle Leahy. O'Brien seems to have a little bit more stuff than Leahy, but Leahy has also been outstanding this year. Look for that to be a committee as they try to figure out who's what there and who's doing, you know, what roles in St. Louis. I definitely see that being a committee kind of moving forward. And finally, I think it's safe to say in San Francisco with the move of Camilo Duvall to the Yankees, I think a lot of people will normally think that Ryan Walker is going to be the closer. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they're going to continue to use him in a multiple inning role. I think Joey Lucchese is going to step up into a setup role there who has been phenomenal for them in the short term. I think that the closer in San Francisco is Randy Rodriguez with his 36% strikeout rate and just, you know, phenomenal stuff. Okay. I think, yeah, he's been really good. And I don't see them, you know, they're not really challenging. I think they're going to give him full reign to see if he can be the guy moving forward. So that kind of takes us through all of those situations. My, oh, my. A lot of bullpen arms got moved. Remember, we're speculating that what teams are really trying to do is extend their bullpens for the playoffs because the price of trying to get starting pitchers was exorbitant at the trade deadline. Lots of relief arms traded places. We kind of called that last week and said that we thought that would happen. It was probably even more than what we thought. So that kind of takes us through that. Dave, any comments before we go to our last break, before we get to our mental health minute?
No, I think just in general, first of all, these closer specs are outstanding. So I hope people were taking notes. I was taking mental notes and I got your stuff here. But I think a lot of these teams too that are rebuilding, this is a great time in Dynasty to just see, like, these teams are going to see what's working. So if it is working, I would say in the next few weeks, pounce on that opportunity if something is working, because chances are they'll try and make it work into next year as well. So especially in dynasty leagues, these next few months for these rebuilding teams are very important to see what teams are doing, because you could hit a gold mine for dirt cheap. So
you absolutely could, and it's really something to pay attention to. I only play in one dynasty league, and I'm not very good at it, so I'm not always thinking about the future as you and Chris are. I'm trying to win now and win this year. So that will kind of conclude that segment for us. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and finish up the show with our mental health minute. Okay, we're back, and if you've stuck with us for these last 66 minutes, I'd ask you to stick with us for five more minutes as we kind of navigate the last segment of our show, which is our mental health minute that we do each week. And Dave, something that I've been thinking about a lot over the course of the last, you know, week or 10 days, I was on vacation with my family and was able to really kind of put the phone down and be in a place in Michigan where our Wi-Fi didn't really work. And we had to go into town to be able to get any type of Wi-Fi. In fact, when I was working on my articles for the week, I had to find a coffee shop in town that had Wi-Fi that I could steal so that I could do my pieces for Rotoballer and for Fantrax. I'm back in the Chicago area now, but the question that I had for you, and I would really like to ask Chris this question at some point as well. One of the things that we see a lot in social media and a lot of people talking about today is this idea of doom scrolling. And I think we're all probably guilty of it, where we start scrolling social media, whether that be Twitter or X or TikTok or Instagram, Facebook, whatever it might be, and we're just doom scrolling. So, Dave, I wanted to ask you, you know, being that you're a kindergarten teacher and you're, you know, working with kids that don't have a lot of experience yet on these types of devices or anything like that, and I know that you too are really good about putting your phone down and not being available at certain times during the course of the day. How do you confront this idea of doom scrolling that's so prevalent today in our society?
It's hard. It's hard, especially during the baseball season, to, you know, put that phone down, to, you know, focus on things that are not on your phone. I don't usually feel that overwhelming part of, you know, I've got to check, I've got to look, oh my God, this and that. But I did yesterday. I would say the last 2 hours of the trade deadline, I was glued to my phone more than I am proud to admit. But it was something that when it was done, I had to put the phone down because I knew I had just missed out. Like, I was cooking dinner and dinner didn't really turn out because I was focused on my I was focused on my phone.
Right.
Like, I have all of the beat writers on instant notification, and it's just one thing after another. It was vibrating over and over again for almost 2 hours. So I know at some points in my life, I just need to put that phone down. I try my best at night. Probably, I would say about after about 8 o'clock my time, I don't comment on anything baseball related unless it's like a major thing that I would like to, you know, put my 2 cents on. But I really try and just put that phone down, try and spend time with the kids, try and spend time with the wife, and try and spend time just with my own mental well-being. If I want to watch something, I'll do that. If I want to just sit and relax, I'll do that. But I make sure that I do have some time alone or quiet or non-baseball related just to relax because I need it.
That reminds me, you know, it's I think, like I said, I think you're one of the best people that I know in terms of being able to set that time. Like when you go out on your long bike rides or when you go work out in the morning or whatever, there are definitely times during the day where you're not available. And there are times when that happens where I'm like, Dave, where are you? What are you doing? Because we live in a society where, you know, we expect that communication instantly because we have cell phones. So the idea always is like, you know, hey, I'll just text this guy and let him know I'll be there in 5 minutes when you should just get there in 5 minutes, right? Like you don't need to probably text that, but we do that. It's so ingrained in us. And I think what I've tried to do from your example, and also I think realizing, you know, with my daughter getting ready to go to college in about 3 weeks, life is really going to change a lot for our family. And I think it's a good thing. I don't face a lot of negatives with that. I mean, we're very close. I feel like we're going to continue to be very close. I don't know what the communication is going to look like, but I know it's going to be different from what it's been. But I do think that what I've tried to do over the course of the last few weeks is to let go of the phone a little bit more. And try to be a little bit more present in the moment. And for me, what I've done is I've set an alarm on my phone for 9 o'clock central every night to set my phone to do not disturb, to put my phone away in the other room and engage in some level of either conversation with the family or get involved in reading books again, because I've always noticed that I'm much happier and better to be around when I'm a little bit more taking care of myself in that way. I love to read fiction. I love to be involved and immersed in a book. I love to sort of live that other life that you can live when you're in a book, you know, living with the characters, imagining that you know them, whatever it might be. I mean, I get really, really ingrained in books. And it's something for me that I'd gotten away from over the course of the last 6 or 7 months just because of how busy we are. You know, I'm expecting communication from my staff, from my family, my mom, my dad, you guys, baseball stuff. It's constant. You could be on your phone 24/7 and still probably not do everything that you feel like you need to do. So I feel like for me, it's setting that alarm and reminding myself that there's other things that I want to do. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not consuming media some way, other way. My wife and I have really started watching The Bear. It's a show that I really, really have come to like. We finished the first season. We're not the type of people who can watch like 3 or 4 in a row. We're just falling asleep because we're old. So we'll watch 1 or 2 and then call it a night or whatever. But we're kind of meandering our way through that. But that's something that we're doing together. It's away from the phone. It's not me on Twitter looking at what the latest beat reporter is saying about something that's going on with Kansas City Royals. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just kind of trying to stay involved in that moment and reminding myself that my phone isn't my world, that my world is the stuff that's going on around me and things like that. There's always time for that stuff later on. Okay.
No, that's good. That's good what you're doing.
I'm trying. I mean, I've really gotten into the last, I would say the last year or two, I've really gotten into my phone way more than I ever had been before. Like where I noticed it's taking me away from other things. And it's time to change that behavior before it becomes too obsessive.
And that's the thing. When it takes you away from, I don't want to say the necessities of life, but when it takes away from your health, your mental well-being, and your family, then it's, you gotta make that choice, and it should be an easy one, but sometimes it's hard to just put that down and just focus on your loved ones or yourself. Because like we said, the more you take care of yourself, the better you'll be for everyone.
Well, that's well said. And I think with that, we'll probably put a capstone on this lengthy episode talking about the trade deadline and moves that we liked and bullpens that changed and all of these different things. We didn't even really talk about injuries at all, but we'll have time to talk about that next week. So for Dave Funnell, Davey Downer, who was not a downer today, Dave was very uplifting today and very helpful. Dave. To fantasy players around. I'm Mike Carter for the Fantasy Baseball Beat. Torres, we missed you. We'll see you next week. We are a proud member of the Pitcher List podcast family. We will talk to you next week. Until then, please take care of yourselves. Have a great weekend and do something for you this weekend. Don't do something just based on your need to doom scroll or to look at any of these types of things. We're always available for you if you have any type of needs, mental health needs, anything that you're looking for in terms of resources. Dave, Chris, or I are more than happy to chat with you guys on DMs. We will talk to you next week. Peace.